anyway, in keeping in the theme of seed production and seed quality, Susanna did a good job of looking at some of the environmental and other management practices that would influence some of the seed quality aspects through seed production process and some of the crops that they look at. In this presentation, we're going to focus specifically on one management practice in cool season grasses and forage legume seed crops. Forage legume seed production and cool season grass seed production are great enterprises for people in Oregon, New Zealand, Denmark, and other parts of the world. There's one problem. There's a huge yield gap. That is, let me explain this. It's the gap between what we can harvest down here, the farm yield, and the yield potential. If you go out at flowering, and use an example of perennial ryegrass, and measure at peak enthesis, the number of florets in the field, you should be able to harvest 10,000 kilos of seed per hectare. On average, though, producers only harvest about 20% of that. There's a number of reasons for these huge yield losses, at least in potential yield, for these crops. First of all, about 35% of the flowers are not pollinated, they're not fertilized, or they just abort. Okay? So we lose 35% of the seed yield right there. Another 10% is lost to shattering. Susanna just mentioned shattering. It's a primitive trait, perhaps, in the crop she's worked with. It's something we live with every day because these crops are primitive, I guess. And then light seeds. We'll address that, too, as well. That's another 35% of the seed. It may be too small. It may be on the edge of marketable size, but the way that the farmers set up their harvesting equipment, a lot of that seed is lost in the field. And this becomes a volunteer problem for controlling a weed, particularly in some of these perennial seed crops. And so that's another issue that our producers have to deal with. So one of the big problems that are involved in a number of these different seed yield loss issues is lodging. Lodging occurs when elongating stems cannot support the weight of the developing flowers and the seeds within the inflorescence, and the whole thing falls to the ground. Lodging restricts pollination of the crop, it reduces fertilization, and this in turn reduces seed yield. And one of the things that we see is when the crop is lodged, you've got one-third of the crop canopy sitting on two-thirds of the crop canopy. So there's not much light. There's diseases, there's moisture, there's all kinds of other issues in that lodge stand. And as a result, seed yield is decreased. There are some plant growth regulators, however, that we've been able to develop as tools to help deal with some of the problems in these crops with regard to lodging. One of these is trinexapac ethyl, and I'll abbreviate this as TE for the purposes of this presentation. And the other is prohexadione calcium, or PC. These are both registered as lodging control agents, and these are chemicals that we were instrumental in registering in the United States for use in these seed crops. So, how do these plant growth regulators work? Well, first of all, we have to look at the GA biosynthesis pathway. And if we go down all through these steps, Ent-carine and all these other steps, we'll skip all the way down to GA20. That's where it really gets interesting anyway. So GA20, we have a pool of GA20 in the plant, and when we, basically GA1, the next step in that biosynthetic process is the chemical that basically induces the elongation of the stem. So when that stem elongates, it gets real long and flimsy, falls over. So our thought was to control the length of that stem elongation. And basically, both of these products do exactly that, TE and prohexadione calcium. Both inhibit specifically the 3-beta hydroxylation. This is this little hydroxyl group. This is the only change between GA20 and GA1 is this hydroxyl group on the number 3 carbon. But we have other reactions going on, too, as well. We have a 2,3 desaturase reaction, essentially the same location, produces GA5. We know GA5 is involved in the promotion of flowering, particularly from some work done in Australia in Evans' lab. That's important because we believe that GA5 pool is increasing in the plant because we do see increases in flowering. GA29 is another product of this reaction too as well, and we think it's inactive, but that's just another way to say we really don't know what it does. It does something important. How do these plant growth regulators work? Well, the biochemists tell us that they think that they're structurally similar and they act as mimics to 2-oxoglutaric acid, which is the cofactor in this 3-beta hydroxylation reaction. I guess these things look kind of like it, but the trinucspacethyl and prohexidine and calcium. By the way, these are registered as Palisade and Apogee in the United States, whereas around the world, trinucspacethyl is registered as MODIS. In Canada, I believe trinucspacethyl is registered as Parlay. So, what about seed production? These chemicals are very effective in increasing seed yield and capturing some of this yield gap. In creeping red fescue, some of the work of one of my former graduate students, Dr. Maria Zappiola, we have found that in creeping red fescue, we could increase seed yields by up to 38%. On perennial ryegrass, up to 45%, and tall fescue, up to 40%. And there's been work done in other cool season grasses as well. And my colleagues in Denmark and New Zealand and other places in the world have had similar results. Well, how does this work? Well, first of all, we see a reduction in stem length and in lodging. So it acts as it is advertised. So it is a lodging control agent. Both of these compounds increase the number of florets produced. And remember I said something about GA5 and the effect on GA5? So we see increase in flowering. In fact, this is what perennial ryegrass used to look like before our growers all started adopting trinucspacethyl, prohexidine, and calcium. And this is what it looks like today once it's treated with trinucspacethyl at the time of peak flowering. There's a lot more florets per spikelet in each of these. And the growers said, oh, these things look like they're pumped up on steroids. And we also see at harvest time more seeds per spike. On average, that may only be 10 to 15 seeds per spike in some cases. But you multiply that out by 12 million spikes per acre. I mean, that's a lot of spikes and a lot more seed. We see an increase in seed set as well. So conversion of these flowers at maturity to seed. So we're capturing more of that seed yield potential. We also see a greater partitioning of carbon to the seed versus vegetative parts of the plant. And so as a result, we see an increase in harvest index of these crops. So what yield components are being affected? Well, first of all, we see in grasses in general that seed yield is influenced by two seed yield components for the most part. These are seed number and seed weight. In the case of these plant growth regulators, we see that seed number is the primary contributor to increases in seed yield. And I've plotted this along this line right here, seed number per meter squared versus seed yield for perennial ryegrass, but I can also plot increases in seed yield from our published studies in irrigation, as well as nitrogen. So it's all following that same line, that same increase in seed yield. So there's something magic about this, or maybe something science can discover. Seed weight, on the other hand, the other important seed yield component, isn't largely affected by this particular PGR. And this is a little bit different than we're going to see in the forage legumes in a few moments. Seed weight is mostly not adversely affected. In fact, in 23 of our field trials, we saw no effect on seed number at all, or seed weight at all, rather. And in 5 trials, we saw small increases in seed weight. Only in 1 trial, we saw very small decreases in seed weight. So what about seed quality? You know, everybody's spraying this stuff. So does it adversely affect the quality of the seed? Well, we did extensive seed quality testing with the help of the manufacturers, and some of the work was done in our lab, some of it was done in cooperation with OSU's seed laboratory, and here are some of the results that we found. Seed germination, particularly in perennial ryegrass and tall fescue, since those are two of our largest grass seed crops, We tested the whole range of labeled rates, and this just shows you some of those 0, 200, 400, and 600 grams active ingredient per hectare. We saw absolutely no effect on seed germination. We saw similar results for prohexidione calcium, no effects on germination. We even tried application rates that were more than double the highest labeled rate. That is up to 1,500 grams AI per hectare. Sometimes manufacturers would like to see what happens if somebody reads the label or puts too much, does a math error and puts too much material. We also saw no effect on germination. We affected yield. Yield was reduced at those really high rates, but not germination. The weight of the seedlings that were being produced from these seeds that were treated were similarly not affected by application of either TE or PC. So there are some differences, however, with the origin of the seed within the inflorescence. And in particular, I'm talking about the origin within the spikelet. So if you look at the individual spikelet, and we see roughly about 20 of these per spike in perennial ryegrass, if you split it up between proximal, centrally oriented, origin originated, and distally, the top originated, we see differences in the size of the seed that comes from these. So there's a non-uniformity of the seed lots of perennial ryegrass. It's a naturally occurring phenomenon. And we can see this very clearly from the seed weights that are being produced from seed sourced from distal, central, and proximal. It just basically follows what your eye is telling you. And most importantly, though, the plant growth regulators did not adversely affect that already present non-uniformity. In fact, we'd like to see more uniformity. We'd like to see these distal seeds get bigger if we could have. But that obviously didn't happen. But there was no differential effect of these materials on this situation. Seed weight was certainly not affected by TE in these particular studies. I mentioned that quite a lot of the seed is lost. 35% was light seed, so this is some of the seed that you're seeing that is lost from these distally oriented or originated seeds. So position within the spikelet affected seed performance certainly as well. And if you look at germination of these different locations, we didn't see any effects in terms of the seed quality. And at 400 grams active ingredient per hectare, we didn't see any effects of either trinixapec ethyl or the control. They were the same. The seedling weight was lower in those seeds produced from distal and central florets. And that makes sense because the endosperms are smaller in these seeds, so they have less material with which to draw upon to produce the seeds, and so they were smaller. But again, there was no differential effect of the plant growth regulator in any of the three positions that we looked at. So what about forage legumes? And there's a lot of interest in these in Oregon, particularly in recent years, and I attribute a lot of that to my colleague who's in the room, Nicole Anderson. And Nicole, I was fortunate enough to do some studies with Nicole in red clover and in crimson clover, and we're still working on white clover. And red clover, from some of Nicole's recently published papers, we saw a 19% increase in seed yield in red clover by applying these materials. Up to 24% in crimson clover, and right now, in our current trials in white clover, really nothing. But all of our colleagues around the world are reporting the same thing. For some reason, white clover doesn't respond positively. Like the grasses, trinixapec ethyl reduced crop height. It prevented lodging. It increased the number of heads produced. It also caused irregular bleaching of the red clover florets. In fact, it turned them to white in color. And in crimson clover, it turned the florets from red to pink. Now, we understand that this bleaching is caused by the trinixapec ethyl effects on anthocyanin pigment synthesis, and so that's why we see some of these color differences. Seed number, again, was the most important component responsible for increasing seed yield, and increased with the rate of trinexapac ethyl that we applied, up to 800 grams active ingredient per hectare. But unlike in the grass seed crop example that we just talked about, seed weight declined with increasing trinexapac ethyl rate. And in fact, it declined so much so that the best seed yields were sort of at the low trinexapac ethyl rate. So there's a sort of a sweet spot between increasing seed number and decreasing seed weight. We're seeing a similar response in crimson clover and in white clover as well. And we really don't understand why this is different. Perhaps one reason that we're speculating about is the fact that in the grasses, there's only one ovule per ovary. And in the legumes, we have multiple ovules per ovary, so there might be some differences there. So what about seed quality? Again, TE produced these great seed yield increases, but what about the quality? And we're very fortunate to, Nicole and I, to have participated with one of Sabri's graduate students who just finished up a thesis on red clover, and so we know a lot about red clover, and we'll be reading about that in the Journal of Crop Science, hopefully in the near future. At any rate, the TE, basically what they did was they looked at TE effects post-anthesis at a number of different times during the development of the red clover seed, and while there was some initial noise here, some slight differences, the important consideration is that at harvest maturity, that's about 5 weeks after peak anthesis, that we saw no statistically significant effects between the material treated with trinexapac ethyl and the control. In these trials, we looked at TE ranging from about 140 up to 560 grams of active ingredient per hectare, and we saw no effect of TE on harvest maturity of the crop. So what I'd like to spend the final moments here talking about are some of these conclusions. A lot of times we go out, we put in new management practices in the field, and sometimes we don't know about unintended consequences. In this particular case, we're quite happy after the fact to learn that there are no unintended consequences of these products in terms of seed quality. One of the big differences, obviously, in these crops is looking at the grasses and their effects on seed weight and how they operate different than in the forage legumes. They're important tools for our producers because they aid the seed grower in overcoming some of these biological and economic efficiencies, and they certainly close that yield gap. And this results in increased seed yield and profitability for our producers. Finally, I'd like to say seed quality was not impaired by plant growth regulators, at least these acylcyclohexanedione family of plant growth regulators in forage and turf grass seed crops. Is there any time for questions? Yes. Well, they've been tried in quite a few crops in the last half decade. They've been tried in wheat across the country. There's some current work in alfalfa, I believe, in eastern Oregon and Canada as well at this point, that they're thinking that they might have some of the results there. And wheat, it doesn't increase yield the way that it does in these crops. The jury's still out on alfalfa, though, but wheat doesn't seem to be the big yield increases. Christina.
Thank you.